Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. It wasn't that many years ago when most of us likely had but one good old-fashioned home computer. These days, you may have more, potentially much more. We are awash in a sea of variations on the classic computer. Desktops, laptops, tablets, e-readers. Then you add smartphones to the mix, and, well, it's hard to even look up from one screen or another these days. But you might also have a number of such devices that don't always work the way they are supposed to. Viruses or other security issues can slow you down. What was touted as user-friendly software or operating systems may be anything but and may not operate for you the way you want, or the hardware itself may be faulty. Whatever ails your particular variation on the computer, we are here to help today. To diagnose computer problems vexing you, we are joined by two guests. Jim Irick is a security engineer from the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the University of Illinois. He's been on the program before to help address your concerns about cybersecurity, from what antivirus software you should use to what security firewalls you should have in place to how to address any potential computer viruses that may be slowing down or in other ways messing with your computer. Jim, welcome back to Focus.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Also joining us today is Bobby Hardy. She's a user services specialist with U of I's Campus Information Technologies and Education Services, or CITES, and she is here to help you work your way through the user experience. Any problems you may be facing in terms of software or applications that don't seem to work right, or to help you understand how to get your computer to do what you want it to do. Bobby, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Craig.
And we welcome your questions for Bobby and Jim at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Or if your email is working just fine, you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can also reach out to us on Facebook at Will Radio TV Online or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. The phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Bobby, let me start with you. Tis the season. That means a season when all sorts of new computers and tablets or other electronic devices may be on your shopping list. What questions should you ask yourself before buying that next laptop or desktop or tablet or whatever?
Well, my opinion has always been to identify what you plan to use that piece of device for. So generally speaking, these days, most people are doing some sort of email. They're doing some sort of web browsing. And especially if we start talking about smartphones, obviously people are going to be making phone calls as well. So really identifying what you plan to use it for, what your interests are, and what that technology can do for you. One of the, I think, pitfalls some of us that are in the information technology business can fall into is we just want the newest and the greatest without trying to identify maybe what our needs are beforehand. And so that's what I always advise people. So sometimes a smartphone is going to be just enough for what people need to do if they're really into making phone calls and connecting with people that way. We find that maybe the smartphone is the best way because you can do some of your email that way, especially if you have maybe a work computer or a home desktop. Smartphones may be the way to go for you as far as staying connected to email or staying connected to the occasional search online. So maybe you need to Google things. A smartphone can handle that for you. When you start getting into using more of the apps, as far as maybe you want a bigger screen for some games, or you want a bigger screen to do some word processing, typing up messages or saving files, that's when a tablet may come in handy. It's a lot lighter weight than most of the laptops that are out there. And you can get those wireless plans as well, so that you could on the go, whether you're, you know, out in a park somewhere or in a car, you could use that. There are also tablet options that don't have the wireless feature, so maybe you want to connect just to a wireless in a building as opposed to a cell phone wireless connection. So I recently bought one a couple weeks ago that is only connected to a wireless through a building or through a local area network. So that has been helpful for me. I have a smartphone as well, and so any GPS or any of that location information, I use my phone for that as opposed to using the tablet for that. So,
Jim, anything to add in terms of things to think about before making a big purchase?
So I think for possibly when it comes to tablets, is that especially if you're a smartphone user, you like your smartphone, you're finding yourself always you're watching TV and you're like, oh, hey, what else was that actor in? And things like that, mm-hmm. is that, and you have a laptop, is to consider whether or not, before you go out and spend more than a few hundred dollars on a tablet, is to consider whether or not you're actually a tablet person.
Who is a tablet person?
Well, I don't know. I think you have to find out.
Okay.
I have found out that I am not.
Okay.
I have played with tablets from work and tried to, you know, I take one home for a month or so and things like that. And so far I have found that there is not a space between my smartphone and my laptop for a tablet. The job's either small enough and I'm happy to just pull out my phone, or it's laying on the table, you know, next to me, I, you know, look up stuff and there it is. Or the job's big enough, I want to move to a big screen, a laptop, nice speakers, things like that. So I moved to a laptop with keyboard, things like that. So for me, tablets just haven't worked for me, you know, and I would feel really bad if I went out and spent $500 on a tablet and then it ends up sitting next to the couch, charged it, plugged into the charger all the time and used once a month.
How about the context in which you might want to consider a new desktop computer?
Again, I guess it depends on how often you, an actual desktop, not a laptop,
right.
is, I don't know, I haven't bought a new desktop in 8 years.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I've just, basically, I have an old Windows XP desktop. I'm going to do some hand-me-downs and end up with a Windows 7 desktop soon. But it still won't be a new one. It'll be my old multimedia PC that's been plugged into the television.
Right.
Gets turned into a desktop. There are some things where I want a computer that's I can turn on and leave running for a few days. Maybe it's doing a download, a legal Linux download, something like that. No illegal downloads. So I don't want a laptop. I don't want to have my laptop sitting somewhere. But in general, I just don't find myself sitting and working, except at work,
mm-hmm.
In front of a desktop anymore. I have the laptop. And I'm good to go on that. And I have not felt the need to spend money on both a desktop and a laptop in a while.
Bobby, it does feel like we're in kind of a laptop world now, isn't it?
It does. I would say I don't think I've personally had a laptop or had a desktop for over a decade now. And so we have one at home that gets used because it's there. But generally speaking, we tend to have a laptop handy. The tablet was a long debate for us, for my husband and I, as far as whether we were going to go with that or not. I would say a couple of months we talked about it, and I tried one out from work to see if I wanted to use it. And really, it came down to wanting a bigger screen than I had on my phone. I do a lot of reading, and so having the tablet to read, and then also to do some more of those searches online, and use some of the, I use crochet patterns off of the internet all the time, and so to have a bigger screen, that was always available to me was very helpful. So.
But then, again, that gets back to what is the purpose? What mm-hmm. what do you really want to use this for? And if you have very specific interests, that may dictate the size of the screen you want, the kind of functionality you want, all of those things. How much memory you might need in the computer as well.
In a computer, sure, certainly. Yeah. I don't know. The last time I looked at tablets, I don't think I even really paid attention to how much RAM were in them. Storage space, certainly. Whether or not you're going to consume media on it, you want to have copies of movies on it, you want to look at the storage space. But as far as operating system RAM, it's the size that comes with it. There's not a lot of options when it comes to tablets.
There's not a lot of upgrades.
It's just, this is how much memory this device has. Now you can pick whether or not you want the 16 gig, the 32 gig, the 64 gig storage, which is kind of like your hard drive storage. But you don't actually get to pick the amount of memory that the operating system runs in general, that I've found. It's funny that you say about crochet patterns, because so the times that I actually found a tablet useful were, I keep my recipes in Google Apps documents. And so in the kitchen, I actually was using the tablet to look at my recipes.
And that's definitely one of the things that we talked about doing, is being able to have that available maybe on the microwave, as far as setting it down and being able to scroll just by touching the screen while you're in the middle of cooking and needing to get to the next step or the next ingredients. It's been very we haven't used it for that. We haven't done a lot of cooking in the last 2 weeks, apparently, now that I think about it. But The one thing we talked about whether we wanted to go with any specific brand as far as an iPad, or we ended up with an Asus with a docking station that has a full keyboard on it and also has some ports. And that was what we wanted to make sure we had, something that we could plug a USB device into, where some of the iPad has very limited physical access to actually plugging anything in. And so we went through a lot of just trying to figure out what we were going to, like I said, use it for, and how we were going to work with it before we actually finally made a decision.
So. A lot of us are, I think, connecting more devices up to other devices today than certainly a few years ago. So whether it's those kinds of ports within a computer or a tablet, or like an HDMI port to your TV or something like that, that seems to be something a lot of people are. The other thing that occurs to me, a lot of folks are looking towards things that offer opportunities to charge multiple devices, you know, and just connect, and being able to connect all those cables together cleanly is becoming more important. Anyhow, we have lots of folks waiting on the line. Shall we get to some calls?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, we'll start with Joe in Urbana. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I just got a transformer with the docking station, and after going through a lot of the kind of questions, my laptop, I was always complaining the screen was too small, which seems counterintuitive, but I got a cheap monitor, hooked my laptop up to that, love it, hate to be constantly plugging it and unplugging it from all the wires in it, and then got this transformer to be on the go, and I can still do work on it with the dock. So that's all really working well. But my question is this. I've got McAfee and Malwarebytes on the laptop. I have heard that Android, the system on the transformer, can be a security risk. I know nothing I need to do to protect the tablet. As I download apps and various other things. And then especially when I sync everything back up to my laptop. Where do I start on that?
All right, Jim?
So I haven't done a lot of stuff into Android security as far as protecting from bad apps. One thing I actually have, Sophos has a free app that checks every app as you download it from the Play Store. It looks at it and says, okay, it was pretty good. You know, everything's okay. I don't know how accurate it is. I haven't done a lot of investigation, but there are a few, some of the major names have Android apps that then are kind of antivirus, anti-malware things that check as applications are installed. One thing to do, I think, that's the number one rule that should help you on with any, specifically Androids, because it's easy to sideload app, which is, sideload is where you install an application without going through the Google Play Store or the Amazon Market. I'm not sure. I forget what they call theirs.
That's fine.
I only use the Google Play Store, but is to only use the Google Play Store. Don't download apps from websites around, from any websites anywhere on the internet, and install them on your Android unless you are really sure that there's not a problem with that application, because at least certainly Apple does this and Google does it. There, you can argue whether which one does better than the other, but certainly to get into the Play Store, your code is reviewed and looked at by the companies that run those app stores. As a, I'll use it as a generic term. So the safest thing to do then is to use either like Amazon or Google's app stores as your only source for applications for your device. And then certainly you can investigate the anti-malware programs that are in, that are available in the stores. Like I said, I have the Sophos one installed, and I have not investigated what other ones there are. But there are certainly, if you just go to your favorite search engine and put in Android anti-malware, I did that, and I think I found a list with at least 7 or 8 applications for that. So certainly go through, find some of those articles from a trusted news source and go through their review and see what they have to say about it.
All right. Could you, what was the app that you said you had?
So I use Sophos, S-O-P-H-O-S.
Oh. Okay.
They're a fairly popular antivirus company.
And what exactly does it do?
So every time I install an application is updated, Sophos runs it through some check and then says, yeah, it was found to be clean.
Okay. And what happens if you end up with an application that's not clean?
I don't know. I've never.
It hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Joe, for the call.
All right. I appreciate it.
All right. And we'll go next to Kathy in Pontiac. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. I have a MacBook Pro laptop, and I just love it. Don't ever want a desktop again. But I use Safari most of the time, and then I also have Firefox on there. And it doesn't, they don't seem to be very compatible. And it goes into Firefox, it just kind of dances across the top, and I can't get it to do anything with Firefox. And is there some incompatibility with Macs or something? Do you know?
Well, as far as I know, it should run. You should always make sure that you're running the newest version. I actually gave up on Firefox in lieu of Chrome in the last year or so, especially on my – I actually have a MacBook Pro sitting in front of me right now.
Yeah.
I use Chrome for everything unless Chrome has a problem, and then I open up in Safari. So I'm a pretty happy Chrome user.
Okay.
I switched because now my experience was not on a Mac, but my experience on a Windows machine is that I would find that Chrome or Firefox would, after several days, be using up like 90% of my computer's RAM.
Hmm.
I'd have to close it and wait 10 minutes while the RAM was recovered, while the application stopped, and then I could start it back up. And that just got to be just too big a pain. And I do remember people that use that I used to work with that had Macs, MacBook Pros as their primary machine, that they used to complain that Firefox also had memory leaks. So
okay.
it would use up lots of memory. As far as it just you firing it up and it spinning and doing strange things, that I have no experience with. I don't know if Bobby has any comment on this.
I personally have used Firefox for a number of years, and I've been on a MacBook Pro for just over a year. For work and use Firefox exclusively, actually. And I don't know that I've ever seen that problem. I will notice it if I have a number of pages loaded that have a lot of graphics or videos maybe that they're trying to load in the background or along the sides. But generally speaking, I haven't had those problems. Now, I agree with Jim, especially making sure that you have the most up-to-date version of that piece of software is always important, and making sure that it maybe is set to do auto updates or check for updates on a regular basis.
So then the only other suggestion I would have if you want to try to stick with Firefox is that perhaps, and honestly, I don't have enough experience with even apps on Macs to tell if you can uninstall it, completely remove it, and see if there's a way to clean out all of the settings that had to do with Firefox. And then reinstall it and probably tell it not to import anything from any other browser on the machine so that you're basically starting with the clean slate inside of the Firefox settings and see what it does then.
I think I'll just get rid of it. I mean, it bounces up sometimes, you know, from someone else if I go to reply to someone or something. It just seems to bounce in and it just drives me crazy. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for the call. Bye. Next up is Yumita in Champaign. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I have a question, and I'm wondering now whether Firefox might have something to do with it, but it might not. I'm not sure. I have a Dell laptop, and for a little while now, the images on the desktop, and then now also when I open up a browser or my photos, they're warped so that everything looks bigger and wider than it should. It doesn't look all clean and small like it used to. It might have happened after I had to connect to a large screen at work for a presentation. So they had to load some software here temporarily and turn off a firewall, I think. And then it was temporary. But I think some of this happened after that, but it hasn't gone away. And I'd also had a problem with a charger. There was a warning that it wasn't recognizing the AC adapter or something. I replaced that with a new one. And that warning has gone away, but I don't know if any of those things are related. The computer had been slower. It seems to be better now, but it has this weird desktop look that looks like something's wrong with it, and I don't know what to do about that.
Bobby, why don't we start with what sounds like maybe screen resolution change?
Absolutely. Yep, that's what I would identify for that screen all the sizes of the icons being larger, you probably have a screen resolution to match the big screen that they connected at some point. And so going back in to your settings, I believe through control panel, to look at your screen resolution, or even maybe doing a right click on that on your desktop to get into the screen resolution to change it that way.
It's usually under a display section, I think.
You got it.
I think control panel, display, and then you look for the screen resolution there. Yeah.
Okay, so it should be a fairly simple fix then.
It is. And then on most of the time on laptops, if you just slide the display resolution bar all the way to the right, that'll pick the usually on laptops, the largest screen size is also the native screen size. The largest screen size available in that setting matches the what's called the native resolution for the display. And then you do that, hit OK. Windows usually comes back and says, hey, can you read this? And it has a countdown starting at like 30 seconds. That way, if you say, if you don't answer, it goes, oh, apparently you couldn't read that display. I'm going to switch back to what it was. So at least we're back into where you can see me. If you can read it, you say yes. It says, OK, we're saving those settings.
Okay, and where would I begin with this?
So go to all the way to the desktop. So you see your desktop and right click in blank space and click display properties. Depends on which operating system do you have.
It's Vista.
Okay. I think in Vista there's a display properties right off the desktop. If not, go to start and control panel and then find display.
Okay.
And then regarding your power issue.
Yeah.
So I'm actually familiar with that error on Dell's.
Okay.
Thank goodness for you that apparently it was caused by a problem with the power adapter. So Dell uses a center conductor in their chargers that identify to the laptop the size of the AC adapter, whether it's one of their 45-watt or their 95-watt chargers.
Uh-huh.
And if that center wire breaks, then it can no longer identify the charger model. And it basically says, yeah, I'm not going to charge. We have enough power to run the PC, but I'm not going to charge the battery anymore because I don't know how much wattage I can pull through the charger. The good thing is that it broke on your charger. I recently, last year, worked on a laptop where that pin had actually broke inside the laptop, and it was not a fun job or cheap to actually go through and replace that part of the laptop.
I see. So the fact that the warning's not coming up anymore suggests it's probably fixed?
That's correct.
Okay, yeah, because it kept doing it, and then I talked to someone, and they said, okay, that's what you replace. Okay, so I think this should solve a couple of things. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks very much for the call.
Bye-bye.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. NCSA security engineer Jim Irick and Sites Help Desk user services specialist Bobby Hardy are here to take your questions about your computer, maybe a virus or some other security issue is causing you problems, or maybe some software or application isn't working the way you'd hoped, or you just need some help navigating your operating system. Whatever the case may be, you can call us this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Or if email's chugging along properly, you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu or post your questions to our Facebook or Twitter pages. Next up is Sally in Urbana. Hi, Sally.
Hi. I have two questions. First is about, I don't have an HD TV yet, but I'm thinking about getting an Apple TV, and I wondered if I get an Apple TV, will that be able to do everything that an ordinary HD TV would do?
Well, an Apple TV, as far as I know, have they released one that actually has a screen yet?
Apple TV?
Yeah, so as my experience so far, and maybe I'm behind on this, is the Apple TV is just a little box that you have
to
plug into a regular television. And the last model they have, I think, requires a modern television with HDMI input.
Oh, okay.
With HDMI input.
Okay. All right. I guess I'm wrong now. I was forgetting that you had that. It was just a little box. So my second question is, I use Firefox all the time. I have a MacBook Pro, and I love it. Now, you were talking about going to Google Chrome as a browser.
Yes.
So how would I – like, I always – start with my Firefox, and then it comes up, and then my Gmail comes up. Now, how would I get just to having Google Chrome?
So if you just go to google.com/Chrome,
okay.
They have a web page, and there's a button to say download Chrome.
Oh,
and then
okay.
Off the top of my head, I don't actually have the answer of how to set that as default.
Okay.
But in general, so it'll add an icon in the icon menu at the bottom. What's the Apple's term for that?
The dock.
The dock. Thank you. Right. The dock. So it'll add the little Chrome icon to your dock, and then so that you can just click there and launch Chrome.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think anytime you download a new web browser, it will automatically ask you if you want to set it as your default browser.
Often that is the case.
Yeah.
Okay.
As annoying as it can be.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. And next up is David in Urbana. Good morning, David.
Good morning. I have a Windows 8 question. I installed Windows 8 a few weeks ago, I guess when it first came out. The $40 upgrade looked good, and I wasn't happy with Windows 7 Home. It actually looked easier to upgrade to 8 than to try to get to Professional, and cheaper. Anyway, I recently had an experience with it where it lost the USB 3 port. The USB 2 remained okay, and I think they wanted to send it back to the factory still under warranty for 6 weeks, and I decided I'll do some more looking at it myself, and I did a reset, and I got back the USB 2 port. I suspect it was a driver problem. But then my printer, an HP 3600, which is something of a headache anyway, lost its network connection, and I'm running it from the USB port now. With two computers, I have to switch the connections. I was wondering about putting a Y connection to the printer. I suppose I'd still have to do some switching, wouldn't I?
Yeah, I'm not sure about using... There are devices. It's not just a Y. There are specific boxes that can do USB print sharing. I have never used one. But I see on the internet that they certainly exist. The HP 3600, I think, stopped being useful after about Windows Vista or 64-bit operating systems, I think.
Well, it works fine connected by USB.
I mean, on network.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've covered this before. One of the companies I consult for, we dumped all of our HP 3600 and 2600 network printers because we could not make them work reliably on 64-bit operating systems. USB, and there are some boxes. There's certainly I just typed in USB print sharing and found a couple of companies that are making that make them. Honestly, I have no experience with making one of those work.
Well, back in the real old days, I did use one between two. Probably DOS computers, and it was completely mechanical in those days. But
right, yeah, like the big, it had a big mechanical rotary switch for switching all 25 pins of the serial connection.
Right,
so like A to B kind of thing.
Yeah, the A-B switches. The ones I'm seeing when I searched, I'm finding in the $20 or less range. So not break the bank to give it a go. And they say they're automatic, so no having to push a button.
Well, that would be nice.
I would definitely do some homework before just buying one. I found one on Amazon. It's an IoGear brand, which I am familiar and have been happy with in the past for their different devices. It has a 3.9 review out of 112 customer reviews.
Mm.
So not bad.
No.
So somebody's finding it functional.
Have there been problems with drivers with Windows 8? I realize they haven't come out with the first, the upgrade.
So not that I know of, as far as I'm aware, and I have not actually worked on a Windows 8 machine. I just ordered some upgrade licenses last week, so I hope to start playing around. I have a spare laptop at home that I'm going to put on it, or upgrade to Windows 8 and see how it goes. It's my understanding that the back end of Windows 8 is mostly Windows 7. So I expected most of those drivers to be fully compatible.
So losing the USB 3 port is probably just more or less an accident. I reset it, and it's worked now for several weeks and seems to be just fine. But I was wondering about that.
And honestly, I don't have experience with 8 to know enough about that. But usually, I mean, that's if things go away for a while and then come back, that it usually points at drivers, especially after a reset or something. You know, maybe an automatic update installed a new driver for it that broke it.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that.
Quite possibly. The annoyance is that it no longer connects over the network. But I've had problems with that for a couple of years. I hate to buy a new printer because it still works just great. But the two USB cable box, that probably is going to solve it, I suspect. I can't think of any other way of doing it.
All right. Well, David, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. We're welcoming your questions today about your computer, your desktop or laptop or tablet or whatever else has been invented in the last 30 minutes that involves hardware and software and may not be working properly. My guests are Bobby Hardy and Jim Irick from the U of I. Bobby works for Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services, or SITES. Jim works for the National Center for Supercomputing Applications. They are here to help troubleshoot your computer problems, make recommendations, or otherwise help you address the computer technology in your life. You can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. Those phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, and we'll take more of your calls and emails after a short break. This is Focus.
Do you have a favorite recipe you always make for family gatherings? Join WILL-TV in March 2013 for Family Dinner Favorites. We're collecting your recipes for our cookbook, and a few lucky cooks will prepare their recipes live on the air with us. Every recipe we receive will be included in the cookbook. So email your recipe to willmembership@illinois.edu or mail it to recipes at WILL-TV, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Thanks.
WILL programming is made possible by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign, helping provide retirement solutions for U of I faculty, staff, and employees for over 20 years. Country Financial can provide a wide range of products and services for immediate insurance needs to retirement goals. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. And I'm joined today by NCSA security engineer Jim Irick and SITES Help Desk User Services Specialist Bobby Hardy. They're here to take your questions about your computer. Maybe a virus or some other security issues causing you some problems, or maybe some software or application isn't working the way you'd hoped. Or you just need some help navigating your operating system. Whatever the case may be, you can call us this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we have an email from Alan who asks, he says, in our home we have an iMac and a MacBook as well as a couple of iPads, but we're thinking about purchasing a Dell or Toshiba laptop for our son due to cost. And he wants to know, would there be any compatibility issues purchasing a non-Apple product, for example, for printing or Wi-Fi? Any issues in both Mac and PC in your home?
Not in general. Apple's, I don't think he said whose Wi-Fi or router he had installed.
No.
But the Apple Wi-Fi and router devices work for non-Apple devices. Printing, I don't think Apple makes printers anymore, so you're probably using somebody, you know, a Xerox, an HP, Lexmark, something like that for your printer. So in general, you should be able to just find drivers for Windows that will match that device. Now, that may be something that the person might want to actually check, is that it, depending on the age of their printer, is to actually go to that manufacturer's support site and make sure that they have either Windows 8 or Windows 7 and match whether 32-bit or 64-bit to their the printer, so the printer and the new operating system match, and maybe even do a little review out there, because as I've run into is sometimes the manufacturers have offered like new Windows 64-bit printer drivers, but when it actually comes down to making it work, it wasn't worth the effort. It was easier to just go replace the printer with one that the drivers, the 64-bit Windows 7 drivers work on.
Bobby, as somebody who's navigating both the Mac and PC worlds a little bit, is there anything else that Alan should think about in terms of preparing to have a home that has both of these operating systems?
Sure. I guess I would speak to some of the, again, the user experience, but depending on how quickly this gentleman's son picks up a new operating system, there are a significant amount of differences as far as how you navigate and where you go to find different things. And again, this might be something that Jim can chime in on a little bit more, but to me, there's always been more security concerns when you start talking about PCs. That's just my opinion. I know a lot of people that have Macs that are a lot more lax as far as their antivirus security. And so making sure that that's in their forefront of their mind as far as what they approach, making sure that they install some antivirus and do checks on a regular basis would be some of the things that I'd keep in mind. So,
Jim, anything to add to that?
Well, in general, regarding Windows and security, certainly there's a larger install base of Windows machines, and the hackers go where it's popular, or if in case they're a profit, stealing bank information kind of hacker kind of stuff, that there's no point in going towards the low market share. We might as well write our software to hit the high market share, which is Windows. So absolutely, any machine, whether it be a Mac or a Windows laptop, should have some sort of antivirus, anti-malware installed on it. My thoughts are actually is that in general, it's just if you're careful about where you search on the internet and clicking on attachments and things like that, that you can stay away from being infected, because all antivirus and malware software will not protect you from every problem that you're going to run into. The best bet is to see to look at a link and go, oh, that's not good. I shouldn't open that kind of thing. And better to just not test your malware or your antivirus software by not seeing if you can get infected when you have something like that.
Right. Let's take some more calls. Rick is on the line from Champaign. Hi, Rick.
Hi, it's Greg.
Oh, Greg. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. I have a question about user accounts. I'm on an Acer laptop running a Windows Home 7, and the only account I can get is, it's called Dad Guest Account. And I try to set it up as an administrator account, and it won't let me do that.
It's possible that user, if that's the user you're connecting, it doesn't have permission to log in as that user, or to log in, it doesn't have permission to set administrative privileges.
Right.
In that case, you'll have to find what account. Are you able to type in username and passwords, or are you only allowed to select from a list? From, little icons on the screen at the login screen?
I can type them in.
Okay. So it's possible that there's another account on the machine that is an administrator account. If you go to, I believe, if you go into computer management, so if you right-click on computer and go to, and go to manage.
Okay.
And then I'm trying to catch up on a Windows 7 remote desktop. Hold on a second. I think we're going to go to, I believe there should be a users. Wow, this is
okay.
Slow. And you should be able to see a list of other users on the machine. Okay, here we go, finally. So local users and groups. And then under that, there are subfolders, users and groups. Click on users, and you should see the name of other accounts listed on the machine.
I haven't got to local users and groups yet.
Okay. So you went to, you right-clicked on computer and went to management. And
yes.
It should have opened up computer management window.
Yes.
And then under system tools, there's then another section called local users and groups. Or is this, See, this is one that where I run into problems is with Home and Windows Professional and things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There are slight variations.
I never use Home.
Right.
The other place that it might be then, if you can't find local users and groups under System Tools in the Device Manager, would be under Control Panel Users.
I think so.
And then, okay. And then is Bobby telling me that she has better information than me? Oh, okay. I thought I was getting a... so then under Control Panel, see if there's users.
Yes, there is user accounts.
Okay, there we go. Go there and see what the list, if it'll enumerate the list of accounts and show you every one of them.
I got managed another account. All it says is dad as a guest account, and then the guest account is off. So I guess there's... I think maybe somebody set up an account that's administrator, but I can't find it.
Wow. This may be more than can be diagnosed over the air.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to help over the air. I think it's going to require somebody sitting at the machine, because I could get into probably looking at like profiles and directories on the machine, but mm-hmm. that's going to be a lot to try to explain over the air, and a lot of trial and error because I haven't had to do that before or lately.
Okay.
All right. Well, best of luck.
Yeah, thanks anyway.
All right. We'll go next to Donna in Pontiac. Donna.
Yes. I was wondering, I'm always confused on the antivirus programs that you can download, and I wondered about the free AVG, if that's a good one, or are there others that are better?
Well, I hate to actually say favor an antivirus program over another one. I think it's best to do some reviews. Certainly AVG is one of the top free ones that I see people download. If you're on a Windows machine, Microsoft also has their own called Security Essentials, although recently one of the major reviewers of antivirus programs gave that one a thumbs down, which is bad because in previous episodes I have recommended that one. And I don't know where Microsoft's going with that. There's Avast. I think there's Kaspersky has a free one. There's lots. If you just go to Google, your favorite search engine, and type in free Windows antivirus, assuming you're on a Windows machine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You'll get some reviews. Look at reviews from a couple of places, maybe like from CNET or any other reputable news sources that you recommend, and see what their reviewers had to say.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So AVG, certainly AVG free is not a bad choice. I'm just not willing to say that it's the best choice.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Appreciate it.
And that actually raises a question from an email from Terry in Champaign, who wants to know if you have a recommendation of sources of objective information that would help guide a computer purchase decision. And Terry says, well, there's a lot of information on the web. Most of it seems to come from manufacturers, and so its credibility is doubtful. Terry goes on to say, I used to use CNET, but have become suspicious that their advertisers may be influencing their reviews. What do you recommend? Are there what you would characterize as objective resources out there to examine whether it's a PC or some other purchase?
I guess I haven't spent a lot of time investigating whether they're objective or not. And I certainly follow. I understand the user's feelings about CNET. I still don't necessarily say that CNET's a bad place to look at things, but I have also gotten the feeling sometimes that they're just pushing content up there in order to show me advertisements. Mm. Two of the websites that I follow for both mobile and computer stuff are Engadget, E-N-Gadget, mm-hmm. one word, and Gizmodo. Those are the big two that I go to when I'm investigating what motherboard, where price points are. One of them, I think, used to have a feature everyone like every quarter about where things were going and what was a good price and things like that.
I was going to say, I think I think the user's already on a good standpoint of keeping a critical eye. I definitely think you could spend a lot of time reading a number of different blogs or a number of different sites to try and feel like you're trying to get the edge on what you should be getting or what you should be considering. But I think, again, having that critical eye on any of those sites is probably going to be a benefit. One of the other places I always find, it's not necessarily a place, but the different reviews on even just going to one of the manufacturers or going to one of the retailers, especially, and looking at the reviews of people that have purchased those items. Again, with a critical eye, those aren't always the most well-balanced reviews, but it will give you an idea of what people that have actually purchased that item have had an experience.
So. Also, I imagine if there's a particular product that has lots of reviews versus one that has just mm-hmm. one or two, those one or two people might have an axe to grind or something, but there are lots of reviews and they kind of veer in the same general direction, maybe you can extrapolate something from
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, and you know that if you have a bad experience with something, you're always more likely to go say something about it. But I think the opposite is especially true as well. If you have a great experience with something, all the more reason people will be sharing that experience. So maybe even asking around with people that you know and seeing what their experiences are too, with trusted sources. That's always a good plan too.
While we're on this line of discussion, Bobby, we have an email from Audrey who says, I'm looking for a PC laptop for junior high school age kids to use for school, and I want to spend less than $1,000. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, that's scary. I don't know that I have anything in mind. Jim, do you have any ideas? I haven't been pricing out laptops for a while. So.
I'm mostly a Dell person myself. And so recently I actually had two family members, and I think either under $600 or under $500 were some of the Dell. I mean, you're not going to get a lot of bells and whistles, but you can definitely get on their site. They have their everyday deals or kind of a pre-built machine where there's not a lot of customization. You just say, here's what you get. You might get to pick the color, and they'll ship it to you for, you know, I think some of them are in the $499 range. You know, after tax and shipping, you're probably close to $600. I think one thing to keep in mind, not necessarily brand, but when you're looking at laptops right now, it is my opinion, first of all, do not get a 32-bit operating system. Only get 64-bit operating system. That's where we're going, and there's no point in having the 32-bit one. So you'll want to get 64-bit Windows 7 or 64-bit Windows 8, if there is even a 32-bit version of Windows 8. I'm not sure. Haven't looked for it. And then do not get less than 4 gigabytes of RAM, in my opinion. More is better in RAM. I think 4 is machines and things will run on 2. But that's not a long-term amount of memory that I would want to get on a new machine. I think 4 gig is definitely the minimum.
One other thing that I remember when I was looking around at laptops last spring was a question of durability. And no matter what manufacturer you might use or whatever brand you might use, I think there are different types of covers, casings for those laptops. And some might last a little bit better than others. I'm just noting that this person is talking about something for a junior high or high school student or students. And so this might be something that gets tossed in a backpack, thrown around a little bit. You might want something that's a little bit more durable.
Sure. The issue is that in the $500 range, I don't think that there's a lot of options. I haven't investigated that. But when I have had an alloy-cased, two alloy-cased laptops, and both of them were in the plus $2,000 range when I purchased them.
Okay.
So to move up from a little bit of metal with a whole lot of plastic is to mostly metal case, I think, and is a lot more expensive. Now, the other option maybe is maybe a clamshell tablet. Mm-hmm. So a tablet screen that attaches like the Asus Transformer series where it connects to a keyboard. So it's a smaller, they're definitely less expensive, can be. I think that because they're a smaller device that weighs a little bit less and that they tend to be a little more rugged because there's less mass to squish when they hit the ground and things like that. So perhaps that's another way to look at it, is a keyboard-enabled tablet.
I want to try, and if we can get in at least one more call. We have Tiffany on the line from Danville. Tiffany, go ahead.
Actually, I think you may have answered my question on a previous call, but I have two. Do you happen to know what the best app out there, or a good app, I should say, to compress videos?
So in general, as long as you're using a modern codec like H323 for the video,
I'm sorry, it's my phone, my cell phone.
Your phone is probably already using a modern codec that compresses those files about as far as they can be. I mean, you could try something. So you want to actually compress them while you're on your phone, or
no,
you're moving them to your desktop and then you want to track?
Yes.
So you can, what kind of operating system?
We have a Windows 7, I think.
Okay, so Windows 7 has built-in zip functionality. I actually usually forego that and install a free program out there called 7-Zip.
Okay.
And then you can do maximum compression, but I would not get my hopes up for compressing video. Like I said, in general, modern video codecs, which like what you're going to find on your cell phone, are already compressed, or when they make the file, are making it about as small as you're going to find.
Great. My second question is on our computer. Never mind. Don't worry about it. Thank you so much.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right. And actually, it's probably a good thing because we are very near the end of our time here. I guess, you know, the one thing I'd like to leave this with is either of you have a particular stand on the Mac v. PC debate? I know we talked a little bit about this the last time you were here, Jim, but I'm just curious if anybody's moved in, if the needle's moved at all one way or the other.
Well, I have a MacBook in front of me at home. I have a Windows desktop and a Mac Mini for my multimedia PC. I have a Windows desktop at work. So to me, it's
a both and.
It's whatever fits the job. I prefer Windows 7 as a permanent desktop environment, mostly because I'm comfortable with it. But I really like the heart, you know, the structure and how the MacBook Pros are built.
Okay.
It's a really nice laptop.
I was just going to say, I use three different operating systems on a regular basis. I went to a Mac primarily because I could do some dual boot because I do support. So I have access to a Windows environment, but I also have a Mac environment sitting in front of me. I've been using an Android operating system on my phone and now have that on my tablet. And so I touch every single one of those operating systems. And again, I think it's back to what do you plan on using it for? There are a lot of pros to go with the Mac. There are a lot of pros to go with the PC and whatever you're comfortable with as well.
Bobby Hardy, Jim Irick, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And we are out of time. My thanks to our guests and to our technical director, Kyle Mabry. I'm Craig Cohen.